Hey, everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Only Stupid Answers. Yay. But before we get started, I want to talk to you a little bit about Beachbody On Demand. It is an online fitness streaming service that gives you unlimited access to a wide variety of highly effective, world-class workouts personalized to meet your needs, plus extensive nutritional content, all proven to help people achieve their health and fitness goals with step-by-step program guides, workout calendars, comprehensive nutrition plans, and an innovative portion control focused cooking show, Fixate, along with the motivation and support of a growing community. Beachbody On Demand is the total package.
They've got everything there. There's so many different workout options, because I know you use a couple. You're trying out a few. I like Insanity because I like to, you know, sweat out every pound I have on me. No, it's really good though, because cardio has always been a big focus for me, and this kicks cardio's ass. Like, this really gets it going, and I love how the results are just so quick, and you can tell. Now, what do you use?
Absolutely. I started off with 10-minute trainer just to develop the pattern of working out, just to develop a system where I knew I was going to work out every day. But now I've started doing Shift Shop, which is fantastic. I've been really seeing results. My arms have been getting bigger.
Yeah.
My stomach's been getting smaller. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of options. There's PO. There's 21-day fix. So there's over 600 different workouts.
Whoa.
Yeah. So when you've done one system, like I was doing 10-minute trainer, and then it was time to step it up, change it up, I started doing Shift Shop, and that kicked it into another gear for me.
No, patterns are important, and with Beachbody On Demand, it allows flexibility to design your workout schedule from all their different workouts that they offer you guys. No, guys, when you check this thing out, you're about to get an offer code. All right, when you use it, you're going to realize, oh my goodness, there are so many options here.
Not only that, but you know, health is not just working out, but it's the way you eat. There are over 100 recipe videos where you will learn how to prep your meals, cook kid or vegan friendly meals, and even practice your bartending skills with healthy yet delightful cocktails.
Delightful cocktails. Thank you, Fixate. Fixate, check it out. It's a winner. But you can do that. This brand new service, which already over a million members. Guys,
it's nuts.
That's crazy.
And we're two of them
here. And there's two. We're here. And then minus that's everybody else. Yeah. But you can claim your free trial membership. Oh my goodness, we have a free trial membership?
Just for you guys. That's only amazing. Only stupid answers listeners.
But you're going to go ahead and whip out your phones, and you're going to text STUPID, STUPID, to 313131. That's 313131. And you can get full access to the entire platform for free. That's the workouts. That's Fixate with a meal plan.
All there for you.
That's free.
So text with your phone, STUPID, STUPID, to 313131, and you get the whole platform for free. I highly recommend it. It's definitely helped me out. It's been helping Sam out, and it can help you out too.
Very cool. And on to the episode. Oh, hey there. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers, the best damn podcast you can put your ears into. Today, joining us to talk about movies, TV show, comics, we have a very special guest. DJ, would you mind introducing our very special guest?
The lovely Mark Andrako.
Hello.
Good morning, everybody.
Would you mind telling the kids at home about yourself?
Sure.
Broke your finger.
Huh? I broke my finger.
I'm a Gemini. I'm into long walks on the beach and pina coladas. No. I'm a writer, and most recently, a sort of internet personality, thanks to things like this and podcasts and Screen Junkies and Schmoes Know and all that stuff, and in the weird world of the internet. I've been a working writer for 24 years. I write comic books. I've co-created Manhunter for DC.
Wow.
I curated and organized a book called Love is Love that was a charity book to raise money for the victims of the Orlando nightclub shooting.
That took me about a year to get through because it was pretty powerful.
Oh, I still can't read it in one sitting. But we've raised over $200,000, and we're doing printings in different foreign countries to raise money there. So that's super awesome in the world when everyone's angry at everyone to do something nice.
Yeah.
I'm currently co-writing Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica with Paul Dini.
That is amazing.
I saw a panel where Sabrina the Teenage Witch meets Zatanna.
Of course.
And that made me very happy. It brought joy to my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's ridiculous. With the second issue, which just came out on Wednesday, so if you haven't read it yet, and here's a spoiler alert, we're going into Freaky Friday territory. We're having them flip bodies because
I love it.
Why not?
Yeah, that makes me so happy.
That's cool.
That's great.
Oh, and one thing I definitely want to pimp, because the final order cutoff for retailers is December 5th, is a book I co-created with my buddy Eddie Gorodetsky, who is a music genius, TV producer, TV writer. He was on SNL. He co-created the show Mom. He wrote the Batman animated series episode Christmas with the Joker. We're doing a book together called The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson, which is a five-issue miniseries coming out from Image with covers by Pete Woods and Ian Churchill and interior art by Steve Sadowski and Ian Churchill. It's basically a guy, when he was in his 20s, got superpowers, doesn't know how he got them, had them for 4 years, and they disappear. And now he's making his living appearing as a Nick Wilson impersonator at children's birthday parties. It's not a world like Powers or DC or Marvel where there's all superheroes. He was just the one.
Nice.
And it's basically the metaphor for what happens when a kid gets drafted out of high school to play professional ball and blows out his knee and doesn't have any skills. Is what do you do for a second act?
So I love that. I really like books like that that kind of are able to look at that type of storytelling and stuff, the real experiences. I find like that's the best way to use genre storytelling.
Well, it's counterintuitive, but using genre stuff makes things more specific and personal. You know, my so-called life was achingly beautiful, but was only on for 12 episodes because people went to school and lived that.
Yeah.
But Buffy, which uses the metaphor you sleep with your boyfriend and he loses his soul, becomes more specific about this. So this is about as much about superheroes as Cheers is about baseball.
Yeah.
It's what is this guy doing now? And the main gist of the book is his nemesis, this African American millionaire in Cleveland named Clive Morgenfeld, who was his sort of Lex Luthor.
Great name.
Offers him a job being a greeter at the Nick Wilson Museum because he trademarked Nick's name.
Yep. That's great. It's perfect. I think again, like you said, with the stuff that was going on in the world, I feel like it's a really great way. You got a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine get down.
Well, you know, the sort of tagline we were batting about is this book is about a guy who has to learn how to be a man when he's no longer super.
I love it.
Aww. So,
but it's super fun, and it was a privilege to work with Eddie. Eddie is I learned more about writing sitcoms and joke telling and just the structure of that working with him on this book than I would have if I was a grad student at USC. So he's an immense talent. It was really nice to be asked to come on board and develop this project with him.
Knowing how to make people laugh and knowing how to scare people through narrative is very challenging.
Yeah.
It's very tricky stuff.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be talking about Thor Ragnarok, the third Thor movie. Before we do that, we got a couple business pieces that we need to talk about really quick. Just so you guys know, if you're joining us for the first time, thank you. Welcome. That's amazing.
The boy that's talking right now is Sam Basher.
Oh, there's my...
You can find
him. We're a few minutes into the episode. Yeah, it's all good.
You can find him at Sam Basher.
They'll find out contextually.
They'll figure it out. Yeah. And I'm DJ Wooldridge. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters.
There you go. But for Only Stupid Answers, you can go to onlystupidanswers.com. You can find all of our social media platforms, like Twitter, which is Only Stupid Answers.
But yank out the files from Stupid.
Also, Reddit r/onlystupidanswers. Thank you guys for keeping that going. They make fun posts every week. It's really cool. But also, you can find all the places where you can listen to us. iTunes is the big one. Google Play Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Too many places.
But we don't know them. We don't know all of them. But one of the things we love to do is you're able to rate and review on iTunes, and we love it when people go on and give us 5-star reviews. So we got a couple here that we'd like to read. MEHB17, Comic Nerds Unite, 5 stars. It's so nice to get the chance to listen to two people who really care for and love comic books and nerd pop culture. I picked up American Alien because of you guys, your guys' recommendation, and it's now on my list of favorite comic stories.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Now, cool. We have another one here from Mick Scrapio 4. Hey, because that's, we have a catchphrase now.
That's your catchphrase.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, when I don't know what to do, I just start saying sounds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This podcast is easily my favorite out of all the podcasts in existence, and every time I listen to it, it makes me want to go, hey. Well, that's sweet. There are a lot of good podcasts, not to knock ours, but there are other you should listen to more podcasts. There's other good ones out there.
I mean, you know, ours is kind of shitty, but, you know, if you want to...
We phone it in sometimes, but that's fine.
And actually, I believe A is Ron as Fonzie's.
That's true, thing, but that's not what you.
I mean,
did you steal Fonzie's thing?
I didn't steal it on purpose.
Did I not realize it this whole time?
If you didn't, I'm surprised.
For those of you in the audience that don't know what Fonzie is, yeah. It was on a show called Happy Days.
Uh-huh. He said, hey, but I just do that because that was one of my favorite bits.
I guess he does it. Sam does it with so little authority that I didn't.
It's a question, not a statement.
Yeah, and so it didn't connect.
It's one of the best bits from The Office when they're trying to get Michael to not interact with someone who's trying to sell something. And they're like, oh, no, hey. And then Michael doesn't get it. So he just repeats it back. And they keep doing it over and over again until they're just screaming in a room. And the guy just leaves because he's uncomfortable. That's where I get it from. But Fonzie made it. So that's.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, everybody. This has been a big lie. There's a lot of revelations happening today, and I can't wait for more. But let's talk about what we're into this week.
Yes, Sam.
I'm going? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I think I've pitched this before, but The Good Place on NBC, have you checked it out, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy it, and I really like the way they handle ethical issues, and I mean, just anything with ethics and morals. Like, I mean, honestly, I don't, sometimes, like, you kind of hear these problems before or how they're presented. It's just the way that they handle it, and they make it easily digestible for such a large audience while being comedic. It's just, it's so impressive.
It should, the show shouldn't work.
Yeah.
The description of the show on paper makes it sound like it's too clever by half. And the replacing of swear words could be really tiresome, but it's never tiresome. It always makes me go, you know, and which is what it should do. And Kristen Bell is a phenomenal actress. I met Kristen years ago before she was Kristen Bell. She was in a Friends musical, and she's always just been super talented and just one of those people you're like, oh, she deserves that success. And Ted Danson is such an underappreciated gem. He's such a good actor. He can play good guys, bad guys. He's just so great. And to see him, and it looks like one of those shows where they're all having fun. They all look like they're having a great time. So when they're relaxed and having a great time, it makes you want to be invited to that party.
And I've never seen Kristen Bell play this role. This is such a piece of shit. Like, she's such scum. She's so bad. But it's her journey to be a good person. It's her to really try, like, to be better. And Ted Danson, he nailed the role of, I don't have control over this situation right now, but I'm putting on a happy face. Like, I'm trying so hard that, like, the universe might blow up right now, but, like...
Well, it's great casting. I mean, Kristen, as that character, it's sort of like the casting of Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding. On paper, vile, awful, horrible women, but their own natural charisma and natural humanity, you understand why they are the way they are. You don't approve of it, but you get it, which is a huge, huge thing.
Mm-hmm. No, so I will always push for this show because I think a couple of our listeners have like checked it out and it's really good. Also, super short, so it's not like a hard show to hop in on. Also, I wanted to push. Oh, I did. I checked out Dark Knight. White Knight, Batman White Knight, that's what it was. And it's interesting. I still think there's just like a fundamental problem with the entire premise, being that it's the Joker and he is a murderer and this. They do bring up a lot of interesting points of how he became the way that he is.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like he's pushing all the blame onto somebody else and saying that, and he's taking zero responsibility
for his
actions.
Have you met our president?
I mean, yeah. Ooh, zing. But no, it's...
The Joker has better makeup.
He does. And he's got better cooler makeup. Eyes.
And a better girlfriend.
It's also true.
Actually, they deal with Harley in this, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really weird. I think Sean is a tremendous, tremendous talent. I'm hoping the book picks up speed a little, because I did feel the first issue could have been the first three pages of the first issue. It spent a lot of time explaining the concept that we already knew. But that being said, kudos to DC for allowing them to do these interpretations of their billion-dollar characters that are not safe and aren't familiar. And, you know, Sean, I would watch him draw anything. He could draw the phone book, and it's worth of that.
He has these giant spreads of just, like, because in this, the Joker is Batman's biggest fan. He's totally obsessed, which makes sense. And, like, they will show this room with every piece of Bat merch any Batman fan would ever want.
Yeah.
And Joker has it. Like, Joker has every version of it. Like, he can't, like, let him go. He needs to know more or love him or whatever. Like, whatever it is, whatever this obsession is.
And I would recommend, if you haven't picked up the book, buy issues 1 and 2 together and read them as one big issue.
Yeah.
Because I think that feels like a more of a complete episode for what's setting the stage to go on now.
How many issues is it supposed to be?
Eight.
Eight. All right.
Yeah. Right. That's perfect. It doesn't need to be 12, because I think Marvel's pushing out a couple 12-issue things. Like, they're doing Old Man Hawkeye, and they said 12, and I'm like, that's a lot to push, but sure, whatever.
I'm actually writing a 36-issue Old Lady Aunt May miniseries for the Max line.
Going back and reading Garth Ennis's Punisher Max, and you just forget, like, oh man, it's Marvel, let this happen. Like, I don't think they would do this now, because it's very foul. Content wise, but it is perfect if you're excited for Netflix's Punisher.
Are they pulling anything from this, or
they're doing a little of this, a little of that, and I do give Marvel a little credit for postponing the release of the Punisher after Las Vegas, although I do find characters like the Punisher, so there's only one Punisher story. He goes crazy because his family was killed, and then the police take him out because he goes too far.
Yeah.
I do find characters like that very limiting.
Yeah.
But I do think it's the most interesting Punisher we've had. I think Jon Bernthal brought a lot of interest to Daredevil season two. It'll be interesting to see if he can be a lead character, not because of the actor, but just because of the limitations of the concept of the Punisher.
Exactly, because even all the Punisher runs I've checked out, he's best used as you're following people reacting to him. He's opposed to following him.
He's a spice, not an entree.
Yeah.
And, would you like, couldn't, I mean, it's kind of like Taken or something like, not Taken, but like, isn't it, couldn't you just say you can model an entire series off of that and just replace Liam Neeson as a Punisher?
He was inspired by the Mack Bolan Executioner book series, which is basically the sort of like a Death Wish sort of thing in the 70s. There was lots of that when crime was so bad. There was lots of white guys defending themselves because you white guys, straight white guys have been so oppressed for so long.
I know, man. It's so tough.
I don't know how we've made it.
Yeah. I don't know how it happens. But that doesn't mean they can't do anything interesting with him. I just find him, I look at all characters, you know, when you're a writer, you're like, what would I do with them? And I have very little to say about the Punisher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Garth Ennis's take because it's very much like, oh, this guy's a monster.
Garth takes the piss out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and it's not, and you put him in situations where a monster kind of seems like the best option, but he's still like a nightmare. So I kind of hope it's a very challenging with, especially in our day and age, I think, to make the Punisher hero. I'm excited for the Punisher series, but I'm also very worried about it because it's a very challenging topic to do well, because he's not really a heroic character. So if you try to make him like, hey, root for this guy, it's like,
and you couldn't root for him in Daredevil. Really couldn't.
You
could understand him.
And there's an inherent limitation, I think, with the Punisher, where where when he gets the people that killed his family, he should stop.
Yeah,
that was my issue with Tim Burton's Batman movie. When if the Joker's the guy that killed Thomas and Martha Wayne, once he stops the Joker, he should retire and just enjoy his money.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments in Batman Earth One, when because that version of Batman thinks it's a whole conspiracy against his family, and once he finds out it's just a random crime, he has a moment of like, oh, I'm gonna do this forever, like this is just me now, because now there is no stopping point, you know.
That's such a good book, one and two, but okay, what about you?
I don't really have anything, so I'm gonna throw to Mark.
I have a couple of things, and inadvertently it's gonna be like, I'm your gay guest today. Will and Grace has been on fire.
Really?
I was not the biggest fan of Will and Grace as it was on the air because, you know, sitcoms generally, after episode 300, they're kind of, even the best sitcom by that in very nature are episodic digestible bites. But this post-Trump era, it has been political and funny and biting without being strident.
Great.
It's been really smart. And Megan Mullally is a national treasure. On the episode that was on last Thursday night, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it, plug your ears. The actress who plays Rosario retired because she's a cancer survivor and she's old. She was Karen's maid. But hey, they had Rosario's character die. And Megan Mullally is another one of those people who's like, is there anything she can't do? She can. I've seen her cabaret act. She's a great singer. She's a great actress. And she did what is so hard to do in sitcoms so they don't become very special episodes. She brought real emotion. And once you see a character like her, Karen, who's just such a broad joke.
Yeah.
When one scene of her being human allows her to be bigger and bigger and bigger, because we see there's a real person there. So it's been like a masterclass of sitcoms. This is probably the best season of Will and Grace ever because it's so.
That's amazing.
Because they're all inhabiting familiar characters and now they have something to go up against. You know, the world, there was so much progress when that show ended and now we've taken so many steps backwards. And but they do it in a way, much like Seth Meyers is doing, where it's funny and it's good for you and it's not about political party versus political party. It's about qualified people and insane people.
Yeah.
So that's it's super fun. It's nutritious and it's tasty. I just saw a great movie, a French movie that I believe is the French submission for the best foreign film for the Oscars this year, called BPM.
Wow.
That takes place in the late 80s, early 90s. And it's all about the French version of ACT UP, which was an AIDS protest group in the 80s. It's all about that them in Paris dealing with the drug companies and stuff. And it's for kids that grew up when AIDS was a treatable thing, where it's a chronic thing like diabetes, everybody should watch this movie. Because when I was a kid, you got a sniffle and two weeks later you were dead. We lost millions of people.
Yeah.
And this movie is both very sad and very infuriating and joyful and celebratory. And it's just an amazing film. And it's not just for gay people. It's for people because it transcends that. I just saw a really good little movie last night called Lady Bird.
I've heard good things about that. The trailer was really cool.
It's really great. It's about this girl, and I can't pronounce her first name. If I pronounce it phonetically, it's Saoirse Ronan. But it's Irish. Her name's probably like Susan. Not Gaelic. Just this 17-year-old girl wanting to get out of this. She lives in Sacramento and wanting bigger and better things, but not really getting good grades or having enough drive to do it. And it's just a very small movie about this girl, and Laurie Metcalf plays her mom, yet another person who is a national treasure. Laurie Metcalf is so good at everything. Everybody knows her from Roseanne, but she's a really great dramatic actor. She was one of the founders of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago with Gary Sinise and John Malkovich. So she's an amazing actress. Just a really nice small movie about people. It's nice after, because the studios now are only making movies about giant things.
Yeah.
It's nice to see movies that are actually about people talking to people with people problems. And it's really sweet, but it's not too clever by half. It's not, it doesn't wrap up. It's not really about anything particular except the last year, her senior year. And just once again, watching good actors act, and you feel like you're in someone's house. It's just a really good small movie.
The way you describe that, I think they're tonally, I think they're probably very different, but Jim Jarmusch's Patterson, which isn't about anything. You're just following a guy through his life, and it's just beautiful. It's just a lovely movie.
They got more movies I need to watch.
I believe that's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. Can I add one last thing?
Yeah, go
for it. I just reread It for the first time in 25 years.
Nice.
How did it hold up?
Surprisingly, really great. Mm. All there's the two controversial things in the book. There's that scene, and then there's the stuff with it and the turtle in existence.
That stuff I'm okay with.
Neither of those two things take up more than 6 pages total in the book.
Okay.
And the problem with that scene, one, you have to contextualize it 32 years ago. It came out. It's 85, 86. The scene we're talking to, in case you ever, to defeat it with the kids. Beverly has sex with all the boys.
Yep.
Now, in the real world, if that was a physical thing, it's horrible. But when you're reading it, it's less than a page, and it works as metaphor. Because when you read it, these kids are in the 1950s, where sex education was a different thing.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out a way to defeat it, and they realize that their love can defeat it.
Yeah.
And for a bunch of kids, underage kids, they equate sex with love. It works completely as metaphor. You could never do it live action. It's the same problem with doing the Killing Joke with moving parts. Those are stories that those beats are inherently metaphor, and when they're made real, they become distasteful. Even Stephen King has said the world was a different place there, and he wasn't trying to make it. It wasn't lascivious, because literally that whole sequence is a page and a half.
Yeah,
and it's very quick
for a 2,000-page book. Like that's a blip. That's
So you can get over that in the book, but the book is great. I mean, he writes the best kids. You know, some people complained that it wasn't scary enough, but for me, it, the movie, works even better as a metaphor that it, that the kids are adulthood. You know, it's about growing up, and it is adulthood, and you forget your friends. There's a deep melancholy that I think the movie really captured. But the book was great. I read it in like 8 days.
Wow.
Because I would sit down and get, well, Stephen King's stuff is so jaunty. It's like, you know, it's like Ruffles. You just sit there and then you realize you ate the whole bag, because he just writes in such a great populist way. But it's worth, if you like the movie, go back and read the book, because even with this time shift from the 50s to the 80s, it really works well. And there's two chapters that are completely narrated by it, which I forgot about.
That's
and
cool.
When he writes inhuman characters, whether it's Cujo or it, or like the cat in Pet Sematary, that's what I think these things sound like. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. I did think of something real quick that I would like to mention.
Give a shout out.
Because we were talking about, you brought up with Punisher Death Wish, the times these things were set. Reminded me of The Deuce, which I haven't watched the last episode yet. But if you're not watching The Deuce, I highly recommend it, because I love Dave Simon stuff, and I love just the keen observations they make. And Maggie Gyllenhaal's destroying it on that show.
And James Franco's not sucking.
I really like him.
He's really good.
James Franco. Like, this is like
his persona has upstaged his acting abilities for a lot. And I put off watching The Deuce for like the third episode, because I was like, oh, I'm so sick of James Franco.
Yeah,
and he's really good, and you almost forget it's James Franco.
There's a scene, I think it was 3 episodes back, between Maggie Gyllenhaal and Method Man.
Wow.
That just, it's devastating. It's Maggie Gyllenhaal does the majority of the heavy lifting, but it's, oh, it kills. It hurts.
And what's great about the show, too, is that she's a producer on the show. Mm-hmm. So doing a show about 70s porn, which wasn't known for its feminist ideals, none of the scenes she's in and none of the stuff with female characters feels like white guy wisdom.
Yeah.
It's got a definite female point of view, which makes it a little bit more tragic, but a little bit more fascinating at the same time.
Absolutely.
So you can watch it, and it's not a white guy telling you about racism. There's definitely a female input on this that really helps shape the viewing of that era.
Michelle McLaren directs the pilot, and it's one of the most beautiful pilots I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing that they did this and they did Vinyl, because Vinyl is like the bizarro version of this. Vinyl was the most bloated, worst, awful.
That was just HBO, and David Simon and that crew didn't have anything.
No, it was just HBO, HBO, the network. Yeah, because Vinyl was just everything you shouldn't do.
Oh, wait, what was that? It was a biopic, right?
No, Vinyl was a series that Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger produced
there
about the record industry, and it had so much on paper that was good for it. And Bobby Cannavale, who's great.
Yes.
But it was the most overwrought, ridiculous thing in the world. I want to cut a montage of Bobby Cannavale snorting coke and throwing his head back, because you would have 3 hours of that.
Jesus.
Bobby Cannavale was my favorite part of Boardwalk Empire. He was the best villain on that show. But one of the reasons that I haven't watched a lot this week is...
You've been a busy boy.
There's a bunch of boxes sitting behind our thing over here. Chaos Theory's getting a second printing, and I'm putting that out into comic shops. And to celebrate that, November 15th, if you live in Los Angeles, you can join us November 15th at House of Secrets in Burbank, California. I believe we're going to be starting around 5, 5 p.m. So you can, Sam is going to be there. We might have shirts, but we will definitely have copies of my comic if you want to come pick that up, or if you want to come just hang out and say hi. November 15th, which is a Wednesday. So it's New Comic Book Day. That'll be a perfect time to come pick up your new comics.
And it's 2 days before Justice League, so they'll actually talk about your comic and not Justice League's running time or the part in Superman's hair or something
exactly.
ridiculous.
That goddamn mustache.
Yeah, so...
Oh, no.
Goddamn
I want a Blu-ray with the porn stash.
I want to see
what they did with it.
Every time they do Superman with a beard, Greg Pak's run had a minute where Superman had a beard. It's like, why don't we just do this? Why don't we just commit to Superman having a beard, man? It works.
Henry Cavill with a porn stash in a Superman costume checks boxes I didn't even know I had.
I get it, man. I feel you.
I now get the cosplay weird fetishy stuff now. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, okay.
Okay, there we go. So,
you got me.
But Wednesday, November 15th at House of Secrets in Burbank, California. If you live in LA, come join us. Come hang out. I'm very excited. I will be announcing some of the shops that this will be in. It's all over the country. And if you're not able to get it in shops, you will also be able to get it online.
Very cool.
When we're off the air, we should talk, because there's some local comic book shops that won't conflict with the jurisdiction of House of Secrets.
Awesome.
That I think would be great for you to do.
Amazing. Really appreciate that. Yeah.
Very cool. One last thing. Bring up before we hop into Thor. This is from the Reddit subreddit. You guys always put in what you guys are into this week, and I think this is a good shout out to give to friends of the show. The Big Johnny D, The Woods by Sugar Pine 7. I'm not a fan of the genre, but every time I was scared, I felt a little bit of pride, which made it fun for me.
That's awesome.
So yeah, friends of ours, Steven Suptic, they have a channel called Sugar Pine 7. Mm. They won Show of the Year at the Streamies, and they put together a little horror short, and they shot it up in Idlewild, and they have actually really cool prosthetics, and I went to their little premiere thing they had for it. No air conditioning in a theater that was completely full. It was
that's a knock.
Well, they wanted it to smell like a forest.
Exactly.
It was genuinely really fun to watch, and I'm really proud of them. So you can check it out for free. It's on YouTube.
So many of our fans don't like horror things, and it bums me out.
And we talk about it a lot.
Well, that's because there's so much bad horror for the younger generation. There's so much of this PG-13 found footage nonsense where there needs to be like a primer of these are the 10 horror movies from the history of film that you should watch that are legitimately good films.
Yes.
Whether it's Bride of Frankenstein or The Exorcist or Halloween, there's just so many of them.
You threw shade at the original Frankenstein, and I love the original Frankenstein.
I have to throw shade at it. I watched it. I was forced to watch it. And there's so many bad memories with it.
And the original King Kong. But the thing, anyway, whatever. That's another podcast for another day.
You just named about 4 movies I've never seen, so we do have to.
Wait, have you ever seen The Thing?
Which one? The James Arness or the John Carpenter?
I've seen more of the new one.
The most recent one?
The prequel.
Can we turn his mic off?
Yeah. I'll be loud enough.
I even really enjoyed The Thing that came from outer space.
The original is great. Yeah.
Anyway.
We have more movies to watch. It's fun.
But now, real quick, we're going to do spoiler-free
for Thor.
For Thor Ragnarok. And then once we're through that, we'll go through spoilers. We'll warn you guys. Mark, you're our guest.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think? Spoiler-free, what did you think of Thor Ragnarok, the third Thor movie?
This is going to sound, we'll talk about it, and we'll expand in spoilers, but I think it's easily the best Thor movie.
Which might
be damning it with faint praise.
Agreed.
I think while I was watching it, it was enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this might be sort of Marvel's Suicide Squad in the sense that the movie makes zero sense. but it's beautiful and it's mostly funny. And it's, I described the Suicide Squad as a banana split that had melted.
Yeah,
and you don't have you have to drink it. Yeah. And afterwards, you're sticky and gooey, and you have a sugar rush, and your stomach hurts. It's similar to this. The visuals are great. Hemsworth and Cate Blanchett are amazing. It is fun. If you love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I can't imagine not loving this.
Yeah.
I have issues with the Marvel Cinematic Universe just because I think they all kind of look the same. Yeah. But it's a thoroughly enjoyable movie. I had a great time doing it, and there's gonna every gay man in the world is gonna want to do hella drag next year because Cate Blanchett saying I am the goddess of death. It's just like, okay, where's my dress?
The sheer force of her charisma overcomes the fact that I don't understand anything about her. Like,
well, we'll get into the spoilers because I have a list of things that
why is she here? What does she want? Just the sheer force of Cate Blanchett's energy and just the fun she has. I want to see her in like all the movies now just because she's awesome.
It's very much like watching Nicholson's Joker. She is chewing up the scenery because she knows what she's there to do. She's there to shred things, and she's just exquisite in it.
The other thing that really stood out to me, this is my favorite version. I would argue that this is a pretty different version of Thor than we've gotten.
Well, he's kind of playing Marvel's Hercules as Thor.
I
like that he's always like trying to pump himself up.
Yeah,
and I love that there's an insecure side to this big buff guy. That's delightful. And Chris Hemsworth is really owning the role for the first time. That being said, when we get into spoilers, it's really not Thor.
Yeah, but this version of Thor, it's like if this had been the version of Thor through all the movies, he'd probably be my favorite Avenger. But the character that stood out that meant the most to me, that I actually like connected to most, I actually really like Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie.
Hmm.
Yeah, actually, she was my favorite. She was my favorite character.
How come?
Just because she could have been very much a Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, where you're no fun and you kind of disappear into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But she's able to give it an energy that I actually care about what happened to her, and she's the only character in the movie that I feel like I tracks as a person to me.
Mm. Yeah, she is the
joke machine.
She has the most honest, dramatic arc of a character.
Yeah, and meanwhile, she also gets to have fun with Hulk. So she's likable in that sense. She's not just like angry all the time.
That's true.
Yeah,
I personally, I loved it to death. I had so much fun. I was giggling.
Well, this
nonstop.
Is the third movie you've ever seen, right?
I know, right? Yeah, I don't know. All the other ones you're mentioning sound really fun. I'll get to those eventually. I've watched two Fast and the Furious, and then this one. So it was a big surprise. But I genuinely had a lot of fun with it. There are problems. And I did a show yesterday where we kind of broke down that, like, there's a Planet Hulk story that stars Thor, not Hulk. And then you have Hela. And they have an act. They have, like, two acts almost. Then they don't have anything that resolves either of those stories. They just have an end to a movie. And then you go on, and that's it. But, like, so I'm like, you don't feel like any, like, thing like finished with either of them, which is a bummer to me.
Yeah.
But I love the portrayal of every single character that was on screen. It was bloated, but I didn't care. Like I had fun with it. I don't know.
I was never bored.
Yeah.
But for me, a lot of the Marvel movies feel like cotton candy. When you eat after you eat them, they kind of evaporate.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. And like it's kind of tough because I don't know. It's like, to me, I mean, what happens when you see Fast and the Furious movies? What's your usual like thought process? Because you usually love them.
Oh, it's pure joy.
Yeah.
At least, to be fair, I haven't seen any of them before 5, and the 5 is when they introduced Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
You didn't earn everything.
And so it's pretty much just a blast.
You didn't sit through 2.
Yeah. I didn't sit through 2. I didn't do Tokyo Drift for some people is their favorite one.
Yes, it's great.
I pretty much came in when most of culture agreed, hey, you know what? These are pretty great action movies. But I think part of what works for those is one, they're one of the few games in town doing traditional where they're really wrecking cars and throwing people through windows and
what's
stuff.
What's crazy about those movies is that they're basically Roger Corman drag race films with huge budgets.
Yeah.
And they know exactly what they are. They don't have any pretense about them. And if you're serving me nachos at the movie theater, if I know they're nachos, I'm going to enjoy them as nachos. And they don't ever have like Judi Dench appearing as a wise old drag racer from the 1300s or something. Yeah. They're always, even when they have a Helen Mirren or a Charlize Theron.
Yeah. They did get Helen Mirren. Yeah.
But I think with a lot of these
My point
movies,
is that like it feels like cotton candy to me when I watch these movies, and that's fine because it's good to have candy every once in a while. It makes your life a little bit better. So when you look at it, like if I try to break this movie down to see if I could like if I would this would ever win an award for writing or anything, no, it wouldn't. But I think you can tell that everyone's having a really fucking blast during the movie.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it has to be an Oscar winner or it has to be complete pulp. We've become, especially in the recent months, a society of there's black and there's white and there's no shades of gray.
Yeah.
Everything is a shade of gray. And for, especially for genre movies, you put 10 guys, in a, 10 people, men or women, in a room who like genre movies, and they'll all like 10 different movies for 10 different reasons. And as long as you can explain what worked for you and what didn't work for you, that's what's interesting to me. Mm. I just think that these Marvel movies, and they're super successful, and I get why people like them, but I, you know, maybe I was too close to them because I grew up reading those comic books. It feels like I'm watching a 17-episode TV show. There's a sameness to them that I get. Why rock the boat? You're making billions and billions of dollars. I get that. But for me, the ones that stand out are the ones that are a little bit left of center, like the original Guardians. And this one is a little bit left of center. This one's a better Guardian sequel than Guardians 2.
Agreed.
One of the things I liked about, you talk about the elements that do kind of break the sameness of it. I liked the score. This is probably the most memorable Marvel score maybe ever, at least in a long time.
When I watched
it, I thought it was Stranger Things when it first started. I was like, wait a minute, did they license the Stranger? Are they that meta? They're already referencing something that's referencing something?
No, yeah, because it doesn't make sense that it has an 80s feel to it and then none of the rest of the movie really
backs
that
up a little
bit.
I have a feeling Taika Waititi's a bigger fan of metal album covers than he is of Thor.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the opening to this movie...
Well, the composer was from Devo,
yeah, exactly.
So that's as far as metal as you can get.
That opening with it, what's the realm? What's Surtur's realm? Whatever, the fire, hell realm.
Let's call it fire realm, yeah.
That opening was awesome to me. Everything, I was so amped for the rest of the movie, which kind of let me down after, but the opening in hell was dope. I don't know. It was my favorite
part of
the
creativity
movie.
With the hammer, and you got Thor, like, being a little bit of Thor.
I like just starting off. I like this take on Thor of him as just a swashbuckling adventurer, him dicking around in
space.
I
still have no idea why neither him nor Hulk were in Civil War. There's really no explanation of how the Hulk gets to where he is and why Thor is gone.
Yeah, like, because
why did the Hulk explain it? He just said... He pointed up.
Yeah,
that was it.
He just pointed. He pointed to the.
He pointed to the Disney stockholders and said,
"He said, hey, you know, why not?" Like,
which is fine. Yeah. I mean, at every element that they stole from Planet Hulk, I enjoyed in the movie. I thought Korg was pretty.
Well, technically,
fun.
It's not stealing because they own.
Oh,
Planet
true.
Hulk,
but
so.
Like, I mean,
let's say referenced.
There you go. But like, they took it from Hulk and gave it to Thor. That like he's experiencing Korg. He's experiencing Meek, who were really fun characters for him.
I want a Meek action figure.
And I do like the little improv feel of what at Korg. I feel like Korg wasn't even in the movie until Taika just saw him and was like, "Oh, that'd be fun."
Yeah.
And he threw on a mocap suit and he just improv for like a couple scenes. Like it could have been anybody.
Well, when we get to the spoilers, I have some comments about that.
Really? Okay.
But just comments.
I'm trying to.
And even though I do think sometimes the Marvel movies can disappear up their own ass with the humor,
or the devil's anus.
Yeah, exactly. The humor in this worked for me a lot better than the Guardian stuff. I found a lot of the jokes more funny.
Definitely the second.
Yeah.
Oh, because you didn't. You're on the fence, or did you not like the first Guardians movie?
I don't really like the Guardians movies.
It's okay. Yeah. That's
okay. I'm sorry.
I don't know about rewatchability with this for me. It was good the first time.
You're going to see it four more times and then you get back to
I mean, you know what I do.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help it.
This movie will be great if you have your headphones on listening to music and you're working and it's on in the background. This is a great peripheral movie, and I don't mean that as an insult. It's a movie that's beautiful. And the CG on the Hulk in this, because the Hulk is in the movie a lot, probably just as much as Ruffalo as a human.
Yeah.
The acting and stuff they got from Hulk, it's like they stole everybody that worked on Planet of the Apes franchise into this because the Hulk is pretty exquisite. There are close-ups of him talking, and it works. It's shocking how well it is. It's so subtle. That's why no one's talking about it, because I just assume it at this point. But when you look at it, I was like, holy shit, that's not real.
Yeah. And it's how good the other actors played with him, too. It was just something that I noticed, like, when... I remember, like, behind the scenes when, just because I'm new to how they shoot bigger characters like that, how they use, like, little markers and stuff, and how people get distracted when they shoot. I forgot about how the logistics of how they made this work, and it was... Yeah, you kind of, like, just fell for it. This is a character. This person exists.
Yeah.
Let's move forward. What did you guys feel about Jeff Goldblum's character. Did you find him to be annoying, or did you guys enjoy him? Because that
Jeff
was
Goldblum's magical, man.
Okay, just make sure.
He also gets my favorite joke in the movie, but that's spoilers.
Oh, we'll get into that, because it does have a good joke. How did you feel about him, though?
He's playing Jeff Goldblum, which is a good thing. He's not playing a character any more than Robert Downey Jr. is playing Tony Stark. They're playing themselves and sort of being retrofit. That being said, Jeff Goldblum has such an otherworldly delivery that him playing an immortal alien who has a gladiator ring, I think that actually might be what Jeff Goldblum does.
Yeah,
exactly. So, you're like, maybe.
And it was an idiosyncratic performance, but it wasn't distracting because he's such a good actor. It actually has shades of Brundlefly in it. It's sort of like this weird ADD, distracted, just, you know, I want to know what the music is in his head because no one else has ever heard that before.
Yeah.
Although I wish he was blue because the Grandmaster has blue skin. And I wish they had done something with the Collector, who's his brother.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm wondering, is that just going to be backstory, or like in Avengers 4, we'll see them hanging out? It'll probably be an after credit scene, the two of them dicking around for a second.
That could be. It's having Goldblum and Benicio del Toro in the same scene playing off of each other is either going to be the best thing in the world or the most insufferable, twitchy, full of ticks and whistles thing ever. That's never going to be okay. It's either going to change the world for the better, or it's going to cause the end of time.
So either we'll do it after.
I want the bad version of that.
We'll do the after credit scene, test it, and if it works, whole buddy comedy movie with the two of them going through space.
That's what we want. I had we were talking about on another show that just maybe he wasn't even cast. Like, he could have just been walking by in his regular clothes, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
He was testing out some makeup. They're like, could you just step in for a second? Because he's not in the movie a lot.
That could be true, because his costume was the worst in the movie. When you see close-ups of him, you're like, oh, he shops at Hollywood Toy and Costume.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Everyone else looked great, but it was like, he must have said, I'm not putting on armor. Give me a bathrobe, and they stapled some LeMay to it and gave him some blue lipstick.
Love the new Thor. Speaking of like you mentioned, the design is great. A lot of the world is cool. Sakaar looks cool. I love Thor's new costume.
Yeah, and probably likes it too, because the other one was like 40 pounds and it was made out of metal and like composite and just huge. And now he doesn't have the hair. He's not sweating all the time. No. It's great.
Well, he never had hair. Those were always wigs. Why can you make me believe that the Hulk is a 90-foot tall green guy who talks and we can't make good wigs?
It's wigs are a challenge, all right, man.
It's insane. It's not a challenge. I know so many drag queens that can do better hair than anybody. And I'm like, what? Watch RuPaul's Drag Race. Hire those people.
They're going to the wrong people. That's the secret. They're going to the wrong people. They're going to the people that don't know.
We're ditching the
wigs. Get RuPaul to be the wig consultant.
What do white straight guys know about wigs? Nothing. I can tell you nothing.
But overall, I mean, let's rate it. Let's rate it.
What should be our number? We always choose random number. When they're not random, there's something from the thing, but it's always different.
It's pretty random, but someone does the math for us later.
Yeah.
What's a number they throw out in this? We're three in. There's nine realms. Nine realms.
There you go. There you go. Perfect.
Out of nine, DJ, I'm throwing it to you.
What is a high C, low B? Seven?
Sure.
I'll give it a seven.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Mark?
B minus. I'll give it B minus. I'll bump it up.
Like 7.5?
That's not bad.
There you go.
Yeah, and to be fair, because if it's 9, 8 sounds crazy. I'll put like a 7.9. Like,
there you go.
It's like, or barely an
8. You liked it.
It's barely
had a good time.
But no, because now I've been basically just deciding not to think about it. I've just decided.
That's the secret.
Don't think about it.
And I wonder, so we're going, are we transitioning into spoilers?
And 3, 2, 1.
This is our transition into spoilers.
Spoilers.
You mentioned Suicide Squad. The other thing this reminded me of is Batman v Superman, in that I think a lot of my frustrations stem from, I see a better movie in here. Like a lot of Marvel movies, I felt the same way with Spider-Man Homecoming. It's just like, just two more script drafts,
Don't even get me started on Spider-Man Homecoming.
But like, just do two more drafts of the script. Yeah. Like make the three movies. The way I describe it is like, this is three good Thor movies cut together in one fine Thor movie.
It's two decent Thor movies and a half a Hulk movie. I don't think there's any complete thoughts in this movie. I think it's enjoyable, but for me, my ratings come from, do I want to own this movie and would I rewatch it? And you know, talking about writing, you know, when you're a writer and you watch these things, things pop out to you that are writing problems, and it's not because I'm looking for them. I love nothing more than seeing a movie and I watch it as an audience member.
Like
Wonder Woman, I was all in. I didn't think about script issues.
Same.
I mean, I was just there for the ride. This, there were things that just stopped me dead. Since we're in the spoiler alert, why does a rock alien 5 billion light years from Earth know what rocks, paper, scissors are?
You know what mine was? I thought you were going to say the same thing. For some reason, the rock, paper, scissors didn't grab me.
It's
vampire
close,
the vampire joke. When he's like, oh, it's like three vampires together. It's like, How do they have vampires? Like, yeah. What are there space vampires? Like, what are the?
My rebuttal for this is they're all speaking English. He's using words and colloquial
having
a universal translation is easy in sci-fi. We have a device that makes everyone communicate. He would not know a culture. That's like me making a joke that the headhunters in Bora Bora would get. I have no reference to their culture. I wouldn't know an in joke. Rock, what are? Why would an alien that far away know what scissors are paper?
You're totally right. I didn't think about that because I got caught in. But I think the vampire is like that's a being. Though.
Yeah, I get it.
That's
but I think the idea is the fact that if I find myself distracted by these things, the movie's not. I'm not in the movie.
Since we're on distractions, can I give you the other two that drove me crazy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so Thor is the god of thunder, but somehow he's the god of lightning because those are the same things, which they're not. Okay, fine. I get it. Great. But when Thor is fighting the Hulk in that arena and he starts shooting electricity, the device that Valkyrie puts in his neck is an electro taser.
Yeah.
So why didn't he use his electric powers to pop that out of his neck?
Yeah.
If I put a 9-volt battery on a generator, the generator is going to blow that battery up. It didn't make any sense. And the other thing, at the end, when Odin, who apparently shops at like Old Navy now and lives in Scotland.
Yeah.
Okay, no, that's New Zealand. I recognize that. That's fine too. But Thor, he says to Thor, it's not about the hammer, it's about you. Well, that's not, then why does the hammer say only he who is worthy can pick it up if it was only for his son? It changes the whole inherent mythology of Thor. And I get on paper the idea that it's internal to him is great, but the destruction of the hammer, they just leave it there. They don't pick it up.
Yeah.
There's pieces there. And what was
that? So he can find it in Avengers Infinity War.
There you go. Clue
No, that's because Chris Hemsworth's not going to come back after Avengers 4 and 5, and Tessa Thompson's going to pick it up and become female Thor.
Love it.
We've seen the seeds planted in this movie for all the changes that are going to come in Phase 4 because they can't afford any of these people anymore, and none of them want to. And I'm sure, you know, Chris Hemsworth, it's easy to eat boiled chicken and steamed broccoli for 6 months at a time when you're in your 20s, but when you're getting too close to your 40s.
Yeah.
That working out is and taking HGH for every movie, that gets difficult.
Yeah,
they planted so many seeds in this, whether it's the killing of the Warriors 3, or
wow, they just kind of skimmed over that. Continue. Sorry.
You can see they're like, and this is going to change, and this is going to change, and we're not going to have Asgard anymore, and we're going to do this. I joked that the next Thor movie should be called Battlestar Asgardia.
Yeah,
because they're all on a ship looking for a place to land.
You know what? I like that. I like that because I never, and it doesn't help with this movie that Asgard's never meant anything to me.
Oh, I have
like,
no problem with Asgard being gone.
Like,
my problem was the hammer being gone because when Thor used his hammer in this movie, when he had it, it was the best cinematic use of his hammer in all three movies.
Agreed, which is probably why I like that opening so much.
That opening sequence, and he was spinning it like Wonder Woman's shield, deflecting the bullets and stuff. Yeah. It was spectacular, and then they got rid of it.
Yeah. One of my favorite hammer bit that you've ever done in this movie, and the best use of the mechanics of it, is when the dragon's coming toward it and he just sets it in its mouth and stops. I was like, that's
also made him feel like
shit.
A god.
It
was just like, no, he's got a handle on this situation, whatever. Whatever's happening at home, like he can handle this.
Well, you know, the screenwriter saw that gif of the Thor's a dick and his hammer's on the toilet lid.
And they're like, oh, we got to use
that's
that.
That's a funny
gag.
Okay, so now that we're talking about it, now all the questions are coming
up.
So, how has Thor gotten around anywhere if he didn't know Heimdall wasn't at the Bifrost. That's how he got off Earth, and that's how he gets around everywhere, but he's been gone for months, not using a ship, not going, he can't go through space.
Yeah.
So how did he get there?
Whoops.
Yep, there's a whoops.
Now, I don't remember much about the Dark World, but...
Thankfully.
Was Heimdall exiled at the end of that?
No, I think they said it happened in between. Yeah, that Loki as Odin tried to get him and he ran away.
Okay, because I didn't remember that at all.
What do you think of Scourge, by the way, coming into that? Like,
Carl Urban?
Actually, out of everybody, had a little bit of an arc throughout the movie. Didn't need it.
If I can be honest with you, if I were to we sometimes do a segment on this where we say, what if, like, hey, what changes could you make to something to like make it click more? I think just right off the top of my head, it's like Odin at the beginning of this movie's gone. Loki's gotten rid of him. Cool. Odin's gone. We don't need to try and find him. That's the point is he's gone and Thor's trying to deal with that. Have Thor find out from Surtur.
They still had Anthony Hopkins for one more movie. So if you're going to use him.
We have the flashback stuff that where he sees the vision of Odin. So we can have the vision of Odin while technically knowing where he is.
What kind of dick is Odin that he just says, I'm going to go live on a farm and let all my people die?
Yeah, exactly. But he could. So the just don't cut out the whole like we're going to Earth to find Odin. He goes to he finds out from Surtur that Odin's gone. That Odin's not on the throne. In revealing that Loki is behind the throne, that's when Hela can show up for whatever reason. And so we cut out all of that stuff and then have Loki stick around on the planet with Hela, so there's actually a character with her that we care about. And also we could just have Scourge be bad. I love Carl Urban. I'm bummed that Carl Urban was kind of
meh.
Anyway,
I'm just over Loki.
I like Tom Hiddleston a lot as an actor. He was great in Only Lovers Left Alive.
The problem with Loki is we see him as a horrible villain in the first Thor movie.
Yeah.
He brings the Frost Trolls or whatever they are into Guggenheim or whatever division at you know, wherever Asgard is to fight. He murders Agent Coulson.
Yep.
Graphically.
Yeah.
And now he's like Jerry Lewis to Thor's Dean Martin. And they've all forgotten that he was responsible for bringing the destruction to New York City. It's all, I get that he's charismatic and audiences like him, but you can address all that stuff in just one line. This doesn't have to be big arcs. It goes back to, you know, circling back to one of my big problems with Spider-Man Homecoming. I don't need to see Uncle Ben get shot again any more than I need to see Martha Wayne's pearls bounce down Crime Alley.
Yeah.
But no reference to great power and no reference to Uncle Ben takes the heart out of that movie. If you've never seen Spider-Man before and you don't know him, you don't think he has any. He just wants to be popular.
Yeah.
And the problems with Loki could be solved the way I proposed a problem being solved in Spider-Man Homecoming when Aunt May's talking to Peter that first time and she's like, things have been stressful. I just need four words. Since Uncle Ben died, and that instantly gives the movie a depth that is lacking. And in this, Thor should have said something like, you're trying to be a good guy now. You're responsible for the deaths of lots of people, including my friends.
Yeah. Well, and then you could connect it with
also
the idea
kind of Odin too.
Well, but the thing is, so if we say that like maybe that Loki kicked Odin out, we don't know where Odin is. If we leave Loki with Hela as Hela's talking about like, oh, Odin and I did all these things, and then he just decided to change. That's a way to introduce the idea that listen, you can do awful, awful stuff, and try and undo that. There's merit in at least the attempt of trying to be better. Just pick an arc. Just give the movie an arc.
Another easy script fix. Odin's on Earth. Loki exiled him. Okay, to justify Odin being there, his distance from Earth has made him the equivalent of dementia. He doesn't really remember who he is. And have Hela show up there and kill him.
Boom.
As opposed to him turning into gold sprinkles and commit suicide. I guess he committed suicide?
Who knows?
Also,
I don't know what happened.
With gods, they're supposed to, or Norse gods, they're supposed to go to Valhalla after you die in battle. So he didn't go anywhere.
Well,
he fucked up.
Well, yeah. Valhalla in this version is a secret. Hela's like, oh, it's a secret basement.
Where the people buried beneath there.
Because you have a great device in Valhalla. You can bring back Rene Russo. You can say Hela's bringing back her bad warriors who are dead. Thor should find
the key
to Valhalla and bring the heroes back. And then you bring back the Warriors Three. You bring them all back to fight and then have them realize that these warriors are being tainted by her and they turn against her.
Yeah.
It's basic hero's journey stuff. And it's stuff that, once again, I wasn't sitting there in the movie analyzing and going, oh, well, they should do this and this. There's too many words on this page. These are just ideas that floated to the surface. And it's like, why? This is less than a draft away, and these aren't changes that would change the expense of the movie or even any scenes in the movie. Yeah. It's stuff that you could put in there.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But Valkyrie's great.
It's a great version of Thor. It's a very, very entertaining movie.
Yeah.
I feel sometimes my critiques of the Marvel movies is like I'm getting a cheese pizza and I'm complaining that it's not sushi. I get what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
As an audience member, I have a lack of connection, deep connection to the Marvel movies because I find them a little glib and a little surface. Yeah. Now, you could argue the DC movies go too far the other way and are too dark and dour, but I'd rather err on that. I'd rather err on too much gravitas, because if there's too little gravitas, to me sometimes it feels like I'm watching someone play a video game.
Yeah.
And that's the least satisfying thing in the world.
There's just a little bit of a weightlessness to it that, again, you could there's I think my problem comes in when you ask me to pretend like there isn't. So like there's the scene where Hulk's been Hulk for 2 years. Why? I don't really know. But when he goes into the Quinjet and you have Scarlett Johansson's thing and then he freaks out, it's like, this doesn't mean anything to me because I don't know what he's been going through. I don't know where his mind's at. I don't know, like, none of it. There's a weightlessness to it that none of it really matters to me. And I wish it did. Because I like Hulk.
What's interesting is Marvel, you know, Marvel is responsible for lots of us having jobs because of these movies and lots of genre stuff becoming the most, I think, rapidly assimilated genre.
Are you trying to tell me that this episode is probably going to be one of our best hitting episodes?
Probably. Yeah. And once again, when I criticize a movie, I'm not trying to change people's minds. I'm just, you know, I grew up reading Roger Ebert and Pauline Kael and Gene Siskel and people who were actual, like, went to school for, you know, Ebert won a Pulitzer. Even though I very rarely agreed with Roger Ebert, I understood why he liked movies and why he didn't. I like the debate. If you can tell me what worked for you and what didn't, I understand you more, and that's interesting. But for me, it's not saying you're wrong, because everybody's allowed. I don't go to movies hoping I don't like them.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend $18 and 2 hours of my life, I want to enjoy it. And that being said, I enjoyed Thor Ragnarok a great deal. It's not a bad movie at all. Well, I just have a disconnect with, if I was 10, the Marvel movies would be the best thing in the world. I just wish there was a Marvel inherently has, in their comic books, had a more humanity than DC traditionally. And I'm missing some of the more human stuff. Yeah. Although Kat Dennings not being in it, best Thor movie of all time.
You didn't like the meow meow thing?
Kat Dennings, I'm sure she's a lovely person. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
You don't get the appeal.
No, I totally agree with you. I'm trying to... Go with what you're saying.
Kat, go for it, man.
No, go for it.
Oh, you know, you, no, go, you for
go,
it.
Go for it.
I agree with that. That's one of the reasons why I think I like the first Avengers and the last two Captain America movies, because I thought there was a better balance of, hey, this shit has weight, this shit matters, but also we're having fun. And I thought that's what made Wonder Woman work really well, is there's stuff that really meant something to me. We've been like a baby with Trevor in the plane, but it was having fun. It was checking all the boxes that a fun adventure movie is supposed to.
And if you look at good, fun adventure movies that have a little gravitas to them, Wonder Woman did this super, super well. The Donner Superman, Raiders of the Lost Ark. The things that worked well, the humor in Thor that worked well for me, were Thor, because it was organic humor. He was always trying to, like, talk himself up.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff. When it was just weird jokes for the sake of jokes, it was far less insert joke here than I thought of than Doctor Strange was. You know,
that's rough. Personally, that's a rough movie for me to watch. Green Lantern. Yeah. I even said it because I think that it's the same movie, but Doctor Strange.
No, it's Iron Man, but with magic instead of iron, a suit, and a little bit of Green Lantern. My biggest problem with Doctor Strange is Benedict Cumberbatch. His accent is so god awful, and his accent got even worse in this movie. Americans don't all sound like they have a head cold and lockjaw. And his goatee was uneven. It's like, hire a good makeup artist to fix it. It goes to a wide circle on the side of his face. It just looked like, oh, we have him. Get him in here. No. He's here for 2 hours. I just thought, the thing that's interesting about Marvel versus DC is the casting. Marvel always casts someone who's perfect for the role. DC always announces people and you're like, oh, that's going to end in tears. But there's always interest there. I ran like a man up and down the street complaining about Michael Keaton. And then I saw Batman and Batman Returns. And I, to this day, think he's the most believable Bruce Wayne we've ever had. Mm-hmm. Heath Ledger, oh, give me a break. He was in 10 Things I Hate About You. Obviously, one of the most transcendent performances. He would have won that Oscar even if he hadn't died. I think that's a performance. I could watch that performance every day and find something new. When Marvel was talking about Doctor Strange, they were in negotiations with Joaquin Phoenix. My initial reaction was, that's fucking weird. I want to see that movie because I don't know what it's going to be. And that's not to say casting the right person, the most obvious person, is wrong. I just like a little bit of, I like going and going, okay, prove to me why this is good. You know, I like going to a restaurant that might have a bee in its window because the food might be great, or I might get food poisoning and it might not work.
Hey, that means you're living, though. So yeah.
You're living life. What did you think of Doctor Strange in the movie?
Oh, in this?
In this one.
It didn't work. It literally made no sense.
It did not need to be in that movie.
I agree. I thought he felt more like Doctor Strange in this than he did in his own movie.
Agreed.
Yes, but he didn't sound like Doctor Strange. He sounded like...
Just let him be British. He's got a lovely British voice.
He sounded like British. He sounded like the inverse equivalent of Keanu Reeves and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
No. I've never watched that, so...
Of course you haven't.
Of course I haven't. I got a couple other movies I'm watching.
But what was your favorite bit?
From this, I think it's when you had Hulk jumping out of the plane and pancaking on the Rainbow Bridge, which was great. No, that's not my favorite. There's a couple in there. But no, you guys bring up good points. I'm trying to see how can I Now I feel pressure. I got to come up with a good...
Yeah, the spotlight's on you.
I know, right? I don't know why I'm blanking right now. With these movies, it just there's a sense of wonder. And I know they're with comics, especially, like I just read Jason Aaron. Am I blanking?
No,
Jason Aaron, yeah. His Thor, and it's amazing. Like, I was in tears because there's this... And in the third volume, there's a moment where he's talking to a prisoner, where Thor's talking to a prisoner, mm-hmm. and he gives him a gift. And it's just like this really... really touching and hard to get through scene, and it sucks that we don't get that in this movie, but I just accepted that a long time ago that these characters are kind of all the same. They're yeah. after a while, they're not like there's not that too much variety, but that's okay because I like who these people are.
Well, it's a very weird sort of double-edged sword, because the Marvel movies enabled us to get movies like Logan and The Dark Knight and Deadpool and Wonder Woman, which are game changers and genre changers, but the Marvel Studios movies are now almost becoming being taken for granted. You know, my mom took my nephew to see Doctor Strange, and she said to me, "Why, Doctor Strange is kind of like Iron Man, isn't he?" And when my mom gets that, you realize that the good thing about a shared universe is you have lots of tie-ins, but there comes a point in a shared universe where there's a logjam of continuity. And there were so many things in both Spider-Man Homecoming and in this movie that if you didn't know the other movies... Like, you would not know what a Quinjet was if this was your first war movie.
Mm-hmm. Or the sunset reference.
The sunset reference. Like, it took me a minute to get that sunset reference. Yeah. You wouldn't know who Scarlett Johansson was if you didn't know the other movies. And Jim Shooter, who is still a controversial figure in comics, when he was at his best editing Marvel, he said every issue is someone's first issue. You have to make sure that these things make sense. And you look back in the 80s, there's lots of big blocks of exposition. But there was a ton of exposition in this movie. There was the Ares versus the Amazon's version of Hela and the Valkyries.
Beautiful.
There
sequence.
Was the painting that was the same painting from Man of Steel, the moving painting explaining stuff. Yeah. There was lots of exposition. There was just stuff that if I've been reading these characters and seeing these movies my entire life, there are things where I was like, what are they talking? Oh, it took me a minute to remember what they were talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think that I love the most about Wonder Woman and my favorite Star Wars movie of all time is Empire Strikes Back, because Empire Strikes Back is definitely part of a saga. Mm. But if you watch Empire Strikes Back and that's the only Star Wars movie you ever see, you know who all the characters are.
Yeah.
It's a fully satisfying, even with the cliffhangers, it's a fully satisfying meal. Wonder Woman was a fully satisfying movie. You know with the wraparound stuff that it's part of another universe. But you don't have, you know, if you never knew anything about Wonder Woman and you saw that movie, you were fully satisfied. The issue with these shared universes is sometimes it feels like I'm at a restaurant and the chef brings me the dinner and he's like, this is great, but tomorrow the food's going to be even better. Well, I'm here now. Give me a satisfying meal now. Don't tell me to come back tomorrow. Don't reference that. You can do – and it's not easy, but we're at a point now where it's going to be interesting what happens. I completely trust Kevin Feige because he's a good guy and he's obviously the architect. He's the hand that has steadied the ship. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with Avengers 4, which I'm assuming is going to be Secret Invasion, and they're going to recast with Skrulls because everybody's contract is up.
Yeah.
And they're being so hush-hush about things. It's going to be interesting to see the next step of evolution.
Yeah. Are you excited about the remake of Empire Strikes Back coming out in December?
I didn't like the remake of Star Wars that came out 3 years ago.
Let me
qualify this. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I don't actively dislike it, but I loved it when I was a kid. Empire Strikes Back is the only one I own that I've ever rewatched. I just
because it's awesome.
It's a great movie.
That one's great.
Great, great, great movie.
We've got some questions here on the tweets. Yeah, Christopher Holton at Suit. Enthusiast. There we go. We got there. If you could add or remove a character from this movie to make it more plot focused, who would it be? I think we're kind of all in the same boat with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Doctor Strange.
Well, I don't even consider him a part of the movie. He's just like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I would remove Loki.
Yeah.
I just feel like they know audiences love Loki, and Loki's going to appear in every time there's a Thor movie because people love him, and Tom Hiddleston's really good at what he does. I think the movie is more streamlined without Loki. We've revisited that well of, you're my brother, I like you, but I don't like you, but I don't trust you. At this point, Thor letting Loki walk around free, Thor's an idiot.
Yeah.
Because Loki's going
to... Which they even have a reference to, and then he's still...
But Loki's still going to screw you no matter what. Yeah. Loki's all about himself. I would have had Thor come to Asgard, find out that Loki is Odin, lock him up, and have Hela free him at the end of the movie, and then have him make a choice. I don't think he added anything. And that'd be the cool idea that they both fell out at different times of the Rainbow Bridge when Hela pushed them out, and they're both on the same planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. different times.
So a little convenient.
Is there a character that you'd add or take out?
Scourge. He could go the entire thing, or make it one of the Warriors Three. Even though it wouldn't make any sense. Just don't do that. Don't have a. She doesn't need a sidekick.
Yeah.
Or if you were to switch the story around a little bit to add like an extra beat to what she was doing.
Yeah.
Have her invade another realm. Have her do something else. Like instead of just she gets there, kills all the warriors, which was fun.
Yeah.
And then she walks to the. Whatever, the throne room, walks around, and then Thor shows up.
Yeah.
Then nothing happens. And so just have her do something else. And so delete Scourge and see if you can add in something that makes, like, show on a bigger scale than her just taking out Asgard's threats, which many people have done so far in these movies.
And what's also weird about it is, in retrospect, Odin had a daughter. Apparently, Frigga must have been her mother, right?
Yeah.
So Frigga was, like, okay banishing her daughter to hell? They're really bad parents.
Yeah, really bad.
You know, Frigga was so forgiving of Loki in those first two movies. She's going to let her daughter just be sent to, like, the depths of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Vanny at Vanny J, thoughts on the one-eye Thor choice? Was it good or bad one? How many pirate jokes do you think we can look forward to in Infinity War?
Millions. Millions.
It's interesting because the Marvel movies get sort of a free pass with the level of violence and destruction and sadism and sexuality in them that the DC movies don't get.
Mm-hmm.
This was a family film for Thor,
yeah.
But it had two hand job jokes, two orgy jokes, graphic murders with knives coming through chests,
yeah.
And Thor loses an eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I to me, Thor losing an eye means that Chris Hemsworth is done soon because he's not. If he didn't want to wear armor, he's not going to want to wear an eye patch for 6 months of shooting.
I was kind of like, so you've been reading Jason Aaron's Thor. Mm-hmm. I thought the eye was a little on the nose because of Odin's eye. Mm-hmm. In that comic, Thor should have lost his nose.
There
you go.
He should have. Maybe they could have done the losing his arm and get the destroyer arm.
He does, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But in
so it's still
Thor,
a mutilation. It's still like add some stakes, but it's different.
Future or Thor lost an eye too. So oh. it seemed cheaper than cutting off a whole arm.
But Thor losing an eye never felt like I never felt he was in pain.
Yeah.
It was just a thing. He just got mascara smeared on his face. See, there was never him holding his eye or him like being off balance or having.
I wish there was a shot of him holding his eye and blood squirting out through the fingers.
But no, they flicked it out like it was nothing, like he had something in his teeth.
You have a blackhead or something. You know, Hela put some proactive on it and there goes his eye.
You would have gotten a good joke, though, if he tried to throw the hammer and no depth perception, so it just fucking just veered off somewhere.
Smack somebody in the head. Noah Fuerte at the _stupid_stub. What do you think this means for Infinity War?
That big ship is
I'm telling Thanos's. You, that's Thanos' ship. Thor is going to die in one of these movies, and Tessa Thompson's going to remake his hammer and be the new female Thor.
I love Tessa Thompson in this movie, so I'm all for it.
That's my prediction.
I've always suggested, I think if we're supposed to take Thanos seriously as a threat, right off the bat, he needs to take out one of the core three, and Thor is the easiest to get rid of.
Well, they have to, because at this point, Thanos is ineffectual. Thanos is like a cop on a soap opera. He's horrible at his job.
Yeah.
He's done nothing but sit in a chair and complain. He doesn't have any gems right now. He's just
Unless the Tesseract's on that ship. Then
did Loki steal the cosmic cube at the end?
Definitely.
And I will say this. Actually, my favorite moment in Thor Ragnarok was Kate Blanchett in the throne room, and she sees the Infinity Gauntlet, and she just goes fake and knocks it over. I love that she's a label whore. I loved it. And it was like it was a smart way for them to. That was smart writing, because with that one word "fake" knocking it over, it got them out of explaining.
Yep.
Wait a minute, because logically in that timeline, that glove is in five different places at
once. Exactly.
And I love every fan site that's like, well, there's technically two, and there's a bunch of different. Then it's like,
actually, they're all fictional. So.
Yeah.
Exactly. They don't really exist.
My favorite joke in the whole movie was actually the very last teaser when Jeff Goldblum comes out and he's like, great revolution, everybody. You couldn't have done it without me. Let's call it a draw. I thought that was my favorite bit.
I like Jeff Goldblum's guard, too.
Yeah, which apparently she was in Hunt for the Wilder
People. Also, she was in Moana. She was Grandma.
Really?
Yeah, and who was amazing. She was a great role in that. And I was looking through IMDb. She's done a lot more.
Yeah.
So that was just cool to see.
There's a great cast in this movie, and they're all having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. That you can't say this movie's not fun.
It's a very, very, very enjoyable movie, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say it's one of my favorite Marvel Studios movies. I could actually see myself owning this movie.
Really?
Interesting. Oh. Yeah.
I thought you said you wouldn't want to.
I don't know if I'd I don't know if I'd sit down and rewatch the whole thing, but I could see going to some. There are some really, really great scenes, and there are some moments that, even with all its flaws, this movie is worth seeing in the theater. One, because it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It looks like Pink Floyd met Jack Kirby with a little bit of meth and a sprinkling of LSD and a black light. It's a gorgeous looking movie. But Hemsworth and Blanchett are both worth the price of admission because they're both having a great time, but playing characters. They're not in on the joke. They're not playing it in on the joke. Their character's jokiness is believable as a part of their character. It's organic.
Yeah, agreed.
And Hemsworth's arms should get an Oscar.
I
don't even have those muscles on my skeleton.
He talked about at one point that he actually felt too jacked for the last two Thor movies. Like he wasn't mobile enough. So he didn't get as jacked for this one.
Except for his arms.
Yeah, but there was a vein on his right arm constantly from like the top to the bottom. I'm like, what is
the vein on his arm happening? The vein on his arm is bigger than my thigh. And I am not a small man. So, and that muscle back here, is that the trap? I don't know.
And it's
the muscle here. I was like, oh my God, there's a mountain growing out of him.
That's what kind of bummed me out about the idea that they're probably going to recast all these characters. Like, you finally figured out Thor. You finally cracked him. Like, and now we're going to get rid of him.
Well, now there'll be if he is killed in the next movie and gone, there will now be, this movie alone will make his death mean something. So it'll be interesting to see how much gravitas Infinity War has, because we're going to see a lot of characters change.
And I can almost guarantee you, I think the last Marvel movie I saw before Civil War was Ant-Man. I was like, meh, meh. And then I saw Civil War. I'm like, never mind. I forgive all of it. As long as you give me movies like this, it's all forgiven. And then the other movies came out. I'm like, and Infinity War is probably going to do the same thing. I'm like, fuck the fact that I didn't really like Doctor Strange. He's amazing in this movie. I don't care anymore.
Well, that's because some of these characters aren't meant to be leads either.
Yeah. Well, I think
you can look. Hulk has had a successful comic book. Thor, Spider-Man, Iron Man. Doctor Strange never really had a long-term successful comic book. Ant-Man's never had a really long-term successful comic book. That doesn't mean they're not viable, interesting characters, but not every character can carry his own franchise.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid growing up, I loved Doctor Strange, but my context for him was always, Spider-Man's fighting the devil. He goes to Doctor Strange, you know what I mean? Like,
Also, for Ragnarok, I'm surprised of how little people died. Like, there was very little death in this. Even though death happened, it was like...
I did like the solution of, guess we're going to have to fuck Asgard and then bring him back. I thought that was a good way to bring that.
But that was also something that makes no sense. Hela gets her power from Asgard, but Asgard's not a place, it's a people, so she should have materialized on that ship.
Yeah.
Was that, and Odin said that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody said it in the last
episode. I also think Marvel confuses sayings for theme. Like, Asgard's not a place, it's a people. What does that mean to me?
I was waiting for everybody to look at the camera at the end and go, I am Thor.
Yeah, I don't know what that. It's the same thing with Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, hey man, you're not the. It's not you're whatever the suit saying they gave him was. Like, that's not. What's that supposed to mean,
it's
man?
It's the new great power, great responsibility. You can't wear the suit. You can't do
that's
it.
That's a big step down. A big step down for. As far as like motivational sayings go.
We have one more tweet here from Clemens Merker at Clemens_Merker. Based on what we've seen in this movie, how do you think the 3-movie Hulk story arc is going to play out? Because that was rumor.
Ruffalo said that.
Yeah, then the next in 3 more movies with Hulk in it, there's going to be some sort of...
The next 2 Avengers films.
Yeah, so his arc started with this of him becoming Banner. No, he's Hulk
forever
by the end of it.
He's going to be Smart Hulk by the last one and then have to sacrifice himself because Universal's never going to give Marvel the rights to do a Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. I think he's going to be another one who dies. And they'll bring in She-Hulk.
Oh,
I would love
Jennifer
She-Hulk.
Walters.
Or
Amadeus Cho, do they probably still have dibs on... Do you think Universal has Amadeus
Cho? Those contracts are so weird because somehow Marvel Studios are allowed to use Skrulls and Marvel Studios are allowed to use Kingpin, and Kingpin was a Spider-Man character and the Skrulls were Fantastic Four characters. So there's all these weird arcane clauses in the contract.
And then like both Marvel and Fox can both use Quicksilver, sort of.
Sort of, yeah. One gets to say the real name, one gets to make up the name, yeah.
Yeah. It's this movie, he became Hulk forever, and then he'll learn how to not be Hulk forever.
So we're back to the square one at the end.
I wouldn't hate to see Smart Hulk, because
When I
was coming up in the 90s, that was the Hulk, where he was Hulk all the time, and he was Bruce Banner as Hulk all the time. And so that, to me, that's the Hulk I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great visual that they could do. If Thanos is all powerful and has all the gems finally and has the reality gem, he could have Mark Ruffalo Smart Hulk come up to him and use the reality gem and split Hulk and Banner in half and kill Banner and just use Hulk as an elemental force because he can bend reality.
Yeah.
Then you have the best of both worlds. You have the Hulk character. Mark Ruffalo doesn't have to wear a ping pong ball unitard for 3 months.
Yeah.
And they can move on.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That'd be interesting. I wouldn't hate seeing Hulk in a giant brown jumpsuit because that's how I remember.
Is that
Hulk.
How what he would wear?
That's what he was, just giant brown jumpsuit. I
wouldn't
still
mind Mr.
See,
Fix It. I wouldn't mind him being an enforcer for a casino. And
if
Gray
they
Hulk.
Ever did, if they ever did another Hulk movie, it's like you have to do Mr. Fix It.
Do Avengers 11.
Yeah, like
where they're all the low rent superheroes are like, you know, a casino thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, we can all dream. That'd
that's the three. Yeah. That's the three movie arc. He becomes Smart Hulk, and then he becomes Joe Fixit.
And that's where we leave it. That's where people come and check.
That
out
would be great if
while.
Thanos split him in half, and you think Bruce Banner is dead, and he doesn't have any recollection of himself, and we see him getting a job at a casino.
Yeah.
Be kind of cool. I do kind of want to see, and I've seen it a couple times in comics where Bruce and Hulk talk, like they try to like communicate with each other and come to an understanding, because the movies haven't done that. They kind of at the end, they like, he just meditates a lot and starts breathing, and you're like, well, I kind of figured it out.
The sun's going down.
I like that's the only part Thor remembered from that whole thing. The sun's going down.
Yeah. And he keeps just rubbing him.
Yeah,
like awkward petting him. And yeah. I loved when Thor did the fist bump and Hulk and Ruffalo just grabbed it.
Yeah.
And it was nice that they got distinguished. Like, Hulk acts this way, he has slight personality traits, and Banner's this. And Banner got fleshed out a lot more in this instead of just being sad guy in Avengers, where he's like, well, I can't get mad because I'll die, or everyone else will die. And like, at least in this, it was like, no, he can talk about his PhDs a little bit.
Yeah.
Which was it. Like, that's all he said. But at least it was something a little bit different.
Yeah,
so.
And I liked his...
I want to know what the 7 PhDs are. They put that in the script. They better know what things he has 7 PhDs
exactly.
in.
Which,
Not flying.
Although, that was actually one of my favorite action sequences, when Thor and Valkyrie are jumping out of the ship and hitting, just punching ships to death.
The action sequence in this felt like the Jack Kirby Thor, the Walt Simonson Thor.
Yeah.
They were really well choreographed and clever. And that I really, really liked. That's something that I can't praise enough. The scene at the beginning with him fighting the demons, the hammer spinning around, and the hammer, the POV from the hammer was great. And that chase scene when they were leaving Sakaar was amazing.
Yeah.
So cool. And I did like the little joke where he's talking to the skeleton. Give a little exposition. I did too. Yeah, it was
although
cute.
Again, you could
it should have been Sif.
Or
the
skeleton was Sif?
Because that was conspicuous in its absence.
Yes, that is true. Or he could have been in prison. That's where Hela was imprisoned. And so he meets Hela down there. So him escaping allows Hela to escape. Like, once he finds out that Odin's not there, Hela hears it. And she's like, oh, shit, I'm out of here.
Or how about this? It's Loki he's talking to. And when he escapes and Surtur is dead, Loki stays there. And then that's where Hela escapes from and brings Loki with her. And you make Loki the Scourge equivalent. You make Loki her indent. You make Loki Golem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot better. But you wouldn't have gotten Carl Urban.
Listen, you could have actually still had Scourge there. You just would have made him, like, you would have Loki be the conflicted sidekick, like Scourge was, and have Scourge be the unconflicted, I'm down with all the murder.
Oh, gotcha.
And aren't Scourge and the Executioner in comics two different characters?
Listen, I was hoping you'd, because I remember Scourge being a straight up bad guy.
Scourge wore yellow and orange and red armor and full metal, and I thought the Executioner was a separate character.
I'm going to be honest with you, you're
out
of my depth.
I don't remember.
I never gave a shit about Thor.
Oh, you should read the Walt Simonson run.
What convinced me, what reminded me of the saying that there are no bad characters, just bad writers, is I picked up the first trade of J. Michael Straczynski's Thor, and I'm like, oh, Thor can be awesome.
Thor, other than Stan and Jack and Larry Lieber creating Thor in that original run, Walt Simonson wrote and drew the best Thor ever. It was the first time Thor was a huge, huge, huge selling book outside of the 60s. And it's all collected in one place. I love the reference they made to Thor being a frog, because he did a thing where Thor became Throg.
Yeah.
And he was a frog
was
in
Simonson
Central Park.
Battery Bill?
Battery Bill was Simonson. Yeah, that's what actually, I got teary at the end when they acknowledged Walt in like the biggest font, special thanks to the contributions of Walt Simonson, and then Greg Pak and Carlos Pagalian. I always mess up his name because Greg and Carlos did the Planet Hulk stuff.
Oh, very
but
cool.
Seeing them acknowledge Walt's contributions to this movie was great because he is, in addition to being one of the best people, creative people in the world, he is the nicest guy in the world.
Amazing.
He's the sweetest guy, and he still has, oops, as I knocked down the set, he still has the same amount of passion that he had probably when he started.
That's
and
awesome.
He's just a master. So to see his stuff on the big screen, the joy I felt for him was worth every penny.
Let's get better Ray Bill in these movies, huh?
I wouldn't mind it. It would be very cool. It would be so strange to have to explain, but it would make as much sense as Korg and everybody else. So,
yeah.
Well, I think we're kind of winding down. Any final thoughts you want to get out for Thor?
A lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely worth seeing. And I think it's going to have a positive effect on Justice League because the craziness of the visuals of this movie, just being there was never any Earth on it.
Yeah.
I think when people go see the goodwill from Wonder Woman and the weird visuals of Thor, I think being on Apocalypse, which I'm assuming most of Justice League is in, just from what we've seen, the colorfulness of that, I think is going to be. I think the next month we're going to have some really good superhero movies.
Justice League, I need you to not suck. Please don't suck.
And can I ask all the listeners and viewers and people, I know we pick teams and everything, but all comic book movies being good is good for all of us, both
Amen.
On a business level and a creative level. Don't pre-decide that you don't like the Justice League because it's the thing, the soundbite, because I did this, you know, and I'm putting my money where my mouth is on this. When I was doing a movie fights, we were Screen Junkies. They were talking about, I came on to talk about Deadpool, and I'm not a big Deadpool fan. And I said, I will go see the movie objectively, and if I like the movie, I'll appear in a Deadpool costume.
No.
I liked the movie, and I wore a Deadpool costume. Don't go. You're only making yourself sad by going in expecting something to suck.
Yeah.
Go in and hope for the best and be pleasantly surprised. All movies.
Yeah.
All movies. Unless you pull the wings off of flies for fun, you should go in to expect to have a good time.
Yep.
Also, you're wasting your money.
Yeah.
Why would you do that to yourself? I saw also the people who, like, there were some people who booed Justice League when we watched Thor, and I'm like, man,
what are you doing?
We know you're coming back here in 2 weeks to watch it.
And unless you're a stockholder in Disney, you don't have any reason to want Justice League to fail.
Yeah. We want movies. We want good movies, man.
We do. We're excited for it. But Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Let's plug some stuff. What are you doing? What are you working on?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Andreyko. You can follow me on Facebook. I'm very political on it. So if you like orange idiots running the country, don't follow me. And please don't tell me you're not going to buy my books because I don't need you to.
Yeah.
I got the Paul Dini book coming that's out right now. Issue 2 is out now. That's a 6-issue miniseries. The Nick Wilson book I mentioned will be out in January. I've got a couple of movie projects in the hopper and some TV stuff. But like Baby Sea Turtles in the Galapagos Islands, 3,000 of them are hatched. 2 survive to adulthood. So we'll see if they happen. And I'm around doing Schmoville and all that stuff all the time and podcasts that'll have me. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us, DJ.
Yes, at DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters.
Make sure you keep an eye out for Chaos Theory.
Chaos Theory coming to a store near you, or you're able to get it online if you haven't already picked it up. And signing November 15th, Wednesday, at House of Secrets in Burbank, California.
Which is a great store.
I love the store.
Very cool. Well, I'm at Sam Bash. You can find me everywhere. Everywhere. You can find me there.
Yep.
And
except
sure...
watching movies.
Exactly. No, that's boring, man. I got other stuff. But you can check me out on New Rock Stars. I talk about the Flash TV show there and a bunch of other things. And there's some special stuff coming out for the holidays here on Only Stupid Answers. So keep an eye out on all of our social media, which you can find at onlystupidanswers.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you write those reviews and send us your thoughts. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.